Hi everyone, welcome back to the Fowler Hour. Today I'm joined by Alex Aperios. He's a brand identity and web designer. Now this is the first time we've had a web designer on the show, so it's going to be a really interesting episode to hear from his perspective the industry changes he's seen over the last, I think he said 10 or 11 years that he's been working with web, and also how he got into the brand design side of things as well. We talk about his journey and how he worked his way up through companies like GoApe and working with other agencies. Also, how he's kept up with the technological changes and learned as he's gone through the industry. The importance of your brand, your own personal brand, your networking, and how to use LinkedIn as a tool for finding work, which is something that I think many of you are neglecting at the moment, myself included. I'm just getting onto the LinkedIn hype, so we'll be going from there. So I hope you enjoy today's show. Let's get straight into it. Hello and welcome back to the Fowler Hour. Today I'm joined by Alex Aperios from London. He's a brand and web designer. We've been chatting on and off for a little bit now. He's a really awesome dude. We've had a bit of a giggle before we started the show talking about London. But Alex, how are you doing today, man?
Very good. Very, very good. It's hot. It's sunny. Well, it couldn't be better, really.
Yeah, we're trapped indoors and you're talking to me on your lunch break. Love it.
I'm a designer.
Yeah, so for the people at home who might not know who you are, you'll be seen as Aperios Design on Instagram and through your website too. So where and what do you do? Tell us a bit about yourself.
So yeah, I've been a designer for probably going on 11 years. I mean, I lose count, but I say 11 years, so it's about right. So I'm mainly a brand and web design specialist. I guess you could say I specialize in that mainly, but in the past I've sort of done print, branding. I've even been a web designer. So web designer for about 7 years. I've also done some web development as well. So that's something that I probably don't talk about much because I failed at it pretty terribly. So, but pretty much, yeah, just specializing in brand and web design mainly. Yeah.
So what originally drew you to those? Did you come out of school and do that?
Yeah, so route? I went to university and did graphic communication. I also went to college in graphic design as well. And I got into that industry because I was really interested in graphic art through inline skating. So I did the aggressive inline skating and I still kind of do it as and when I can, but I was just sort of drawn to the artwork and the designs and stuff. And I was like, how the hell am I going to do this?
So, what do you mean by aggressive inline skating?
No, so like this is hard to
describe. Does it come with people a club? Always ask me, when like I say a bat inline, with nails or something?
No. Like inline skating, like in skate parks. You call it aggressive because when you say inline skating, people are like, oh, so you just like go around the streets and stuff.
It's like, they think of like Venice Beach with the girls in hot pants. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm hot pants and things like that. No, I don't do that type of skating. It's similar to skateboarding, I guess, and it's in the skate park. It's like vert ramps and like street skating and that type of stuff. And it has like a whole industry, I guess. Okay, and we're all wearing like real baggy clothing and had loads of cool graphics and that type of stuff. And I was like, I'm always really interested in the artwork. I've always been a creative person from when I was a kid, like drawing like comics and things like that. But it wasn't until I got into skating that I was like, I really want to do something like this. And then I went to my local college for an open day and found like all of these really cool prints and t-shirts that were all hanging up. And I decided to enroll there. So that's how I originally got into design. So I obviously went to college, did 2 years there in just graphic design there, and then did three years of university in graphic communication. And I stayed locally. Most of my friends went away to like far away London or like Manchester or up north. But I decided to stay in Suffolk and just studied in that graphic communication and course from there. So I got into my first job just out of university. I think it was within a year because I was actually working as a salesman in Free, the phone company, while I was there. So, and I absolutely hated it because I was having to sell really terrible phones to people.
mid 2000s?
Yeah, no, this is like going on, I think it's like 2004, 2005.
Yeah, those phones were not good.
they were still flogging like Sony Ericssons. I think probably the iPhone had probably come out maybe a year after that. And everyone wanted them. So you get people come in and they were like, we really want this phone. I'm like, oh yeah, but I've been told to sell you this phone, so you're gonna have to have this. And I was like, yep, I'm definitely not supposed to be a salesman. Made no sales. I was like, gotta get out of this. So I landed my first job in it's actually like a veterinary company. And they just specialized in graphic design for loads of the vets in the Suffolk and Ipswich area. But they also had a magazine called Pet Focus. So it was actually quite heavily print and display focused at that point. But I was always really interested in like layout, grid systems, that type of stuff. And then at the time I joined that job, they had an art director there who basically just up and left on the first day of my job there. He was like, yeah, I'm leaving now. So I had this art director who was supposed to be mentoring me. He just left.
I don't like the look of the new boy.
Yeah, it's probably me.
I'll didn't probably bring me donuts on the first day. I'm out.
Yeah, so he just disappeared. And he was like, yeah, so I look after all the websites, the magazines, and you're going to have to like display ads for all of the exhibitions that they do and the NEC as well. So it was actually quite daunting because I jumped into this job having, you know, university experience, not really much, you know, at all. It was pretty scary. But I kind of landed on my feet a little bit because it meant that I could learn so much. I absorbed tons and tons of information. I went home and read tons of books on web design, web development, ended up building all of their websites for like the 2 years prior, like 2 years after that. So it was pretty quickly that I started to become a web designer, and I didn't really know why I was doing it. It was just, I just started loving layout and testing, like UI, that type of thing. And back then you wouldn't even know what UI was. It wasn't really called that because it was still like just web design, web development. So that was quite an interesting role. So it was probably from the 2 years after I went to university that I became a web designer, but I just didn't really call myself that. I just called myself a graphic designer because I still did logos and magazines and that type of stuff. So that was probably where it started, to be honest. And then from then I went into another agency after I left there, solely as a web designer, barely did any branding. I think that lasted about 2.5 years in that agency, and that was based in Lavenham in Suffolk, which is a really weird place for an agency to be. So it was like, but that was pretty intense, and that was working with like automotive industries. So I was doing a lot of web design for car manufacturers. I did a lot of work with Land Rover, Jaguar, Toyota, that type of stuff. That was quite fun.
Nice.
And then I decided to left there because they wanted to move back to London. I didn't feel I was ready to go to London at that point. I think it was just probably like 4 or 5 years into my design career, basically. And I was like, no, I wanted to stay. I stayed in the Suffolk bubble, I guess you could say, in the middle of nowhere, just progressing. Decided to go and become a web developer for a year. In a tech company working for non-profit organizations. So it's all charities, that type of stuff. And I got there and they got me into some Java-based code, which I'd never done before. I realized that I had no idea what I was doing, no idea why they hired me. Within a year of that, I'd left.
Like, you're talking about being thrown in the deep end, like your art director left, like you had to study up on web design, you had to do this and that, and then you go into like, you can really tell what you wanted to do and what your clearly your talent is in, because you got dropped in the deep end for web design and you picked it up and ran with it. But the second it comes to development and JavaScript, I mean, like, I don't, the word JSON and JavaScript just scares me. Like, I see it in people being like, oh yeah, well, you're just using a bit of like JSON code for this. And I'm like, not touching it. Nope.
Yeah. I mean, I got pretty handy at HTML and CSS, and like, back then you could get away with building a website with just front end codes. You didn't really need back end. And I was still like learning. Yeah. I was still learning like back end code, but I didn't understand it. And I was just on these websites and just patching together this code that I found, like copy and paste. But it worked. And at that point, I was quite lucky because I was getting quite good at web design. And I kind of, I think when you understand how websites are built, your web design becomes a bit better for developers to hand off for finished projects, because they they look at a lot of web designers who don't really know how to code like we're ourselves, basically. They're like, oh, what have you made me do? They're like, I can't build this. Why are there tons of like triangle shapes everywhere? There's no way this is going to work in code. But when you work in web development for a little while, this gives you like a go. I guess it gets you ahead of other people because you can understand how a website is put together, how the pages are going to become, you know, and that kind of always helped me when I've had to work with developers in the past. So, where were we at? So I'm trying to think how far I've gone.
So let's kind of just dive in on that a little bit, because it's interesting to hear from my perspective. I don't often get to talk to web designers on the show. Yeah. And the way that you kind of summed it up as kind of half fell into it, half were intrigued by it. Did you, when you were growing up and going through that education process, did you ever see web design as an option? Or was it kind of a, wow, what's this cool thing that is the agency's doing as well? Like, can I learn a bit more of that? And kind of picked it up through there. Did you ever see yourself focusing on web design to start with?
Strangely, I didn't. I think like I was always like overly creative in like university and stuff. I did a lot of like Photoshop based stuff where I was just playing with like shapes and even scanning stuff in like from magazines. I did a lot of like montage work basically and then create posters out of that. So I have at that point I didn't have any like emotion towards web design, and I guess back then web design was still really, really new. Like there was the websites were bad, man, like so bad. Like they weren't designed properly, they barely worked, and so I didn't even take any interest in that. I suppose it wasn't until I got into my first job that I was like, actually I'm quite good at this. Because I was chucked in that deep end, I was like, well, why don't I go with it? I've always kind of done that with my life. I've not really made a plan. I mean, it doesn't sound great, but sometimes I've always just fallen into the right place at the right time. Been quite lucky with that. I've always landed on my feet a little. So I guess, in answer to your question, probably no, I didn't. And then I've kind of just fell into it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. But when you fall and land on your feet, that's the best time to start running, because you don't have to pick yourself up. You may as well just keep moving forward. So you were kind of batting around Suffolk for a bit, but you're in London now. So when did that mindset shift come in and kind of intrigued you to come up here?
That started when I left, after the web development job. I went to another agency. I actually went to GoApe for a little while. I don't know if you know the company GoApe. Yeah.
So GoApe, for people listening at home, is like it's like an adventure course, like an assault course, but it's usually like hung up in the trees. So you're on like wires about 30 foot off the ground. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did that for about 6 months and it was intense because they didn't have like a design team. It was
hopefully not actually intense.
No, it wasn't intense. Although it could have been.
Yeah.
And they were like, I had an interview and it was like, it's quite a really hard interview actually, because we had like 3 or 4 interviews where I did one and they really liked me. I had to go away and design a whole website to redesign their current website, which was quite difficult.
Jeez.
I did 2 like concepts.
For an interview?
Yeah, for an interview. This
Jeez.
Was, they were quite hard to get into. Yeah. So,
that's rough.
Yeah. It was a really, really hard interview. I did the design and then it was like a proper brief. So I went in and then presented my work and they really liked it, but they were like, they even gave me feedback as if like they were a client. I was like, what? This feels strange. And they were like, oh, we're not so keen on this concept. Can you go back and like change it and come back to me? I was like, this feels a bit weird. I was like, it felt like they were going to take my work and use it. So I was a bit hesitant about going to the interview, but I went back and did something different, came back and then met the boss of the whole business. And he was like, yeah, we really, really like you. Do you think you're going to be able to handle the design team? I was like, oh, is there a design team? They're like, oh, no, but you're going to basically create it. So again, I was like, put myself in the deep end again. And I had to design all their print material, all the web material, absolutely everything for the entire business, as well as supplying all of their print stuff to print for all of their 20 sites around the country. It was probably the most intense job I've ever taken. I basically had no time to myself. I went to work really early, worked all day, came home, worked, and probably until midnight. And this was like nonstop for about 3 months. I had no time off. And at that point, I realized that I wasn't really doing anything creative. I wasn't enjoying it. That I just had to leave because this just didn't feel right for me. It was just churning out work that wasn't fun.
So all the work I saw from Go Ape's promotional stuff, was this? What year was this?
This was probably 2009. No, let me think. No, it wasn't actually. No, it was just 2013. Christ. No, I keep thinking. Yeah, 2013.
Yeah, so like 6 years ago. So like, yeah, okay. So the time I was around college. Yeah, I can imagine what that was like. Yeah. I can imagine what that material would have looked like.
Yeah, I think they still haven't changed the brand much, actually. So a lot of it is still pretty much the same as what I was working on. So
you were hired on the basis of being part of a design team and leading a team.
Yeah.
Did that ever materialize, or was it just you and a title that said senior director?
Basically just a title. And they were like, we expect you to probably hire someone within like a couple of months after, but that never went anywhere. And they were just like, it was just meetings after meetings and then work, and it just nothing really got done that I wanted to get done while I was there. The website was terrible. It was just on a framework that barely worked. It was a system that you couldn't really update or do anything with. I think the website's a lot better since then, but it was pretty bad. Yeah. So I couldn't really sustain being there. It wasn't really where I wanted to be. So at that point I left and actually moved to a really good agency based in Cambridge. So you could sort of see I was now venturing more towards London at this point. And they were called Mobax.
Skirting around the edge, but yeah.
Yeah, just around the edge. And they were incredible, actually. I spent about two to 3 years there just as like the...
Sorry, where was that again?
They're called Mobas.
Mobas, okay.
Yeah, they're like... they're a big agency in Cambridge. They're pretty well established. They're always like winning awards, that type of thing. And landed on my feet there as well. They needed like a senior web designer. So I looked after pretty much all the web design and leading all of the pitch work there while I was there. And that is kind of where I went into my own and then became more of a sustainable web designer. That's when I really got into web design at that point. Yeah. So
moving through to that kind of Cambridge area and picking up that job, you're obviously still working in agencies. Were you doing any kind of freelancy stuff on the side at that time, or was it just head down?
Sort of. It was kind of like, it's because the jobs I was in were so intense that I came home and like I was just too tired to do anything for myself. There were times where friends would approach me and just say, I need a logo done, or I want a business card, or maybe a landing page. I did a few like home pages for people that I knew for a couple of like kitchen businesses and things like that, just to keep my own sanity, basically. Yeah.
Mm.
But at that point, because the work was so creative, I didn't feel I needed to go home and sort of prove myself to anyone else, I guess. It was quite rewarding for the people I was working with, that I was working with the Ibis hotels, that type of thing. And I'm not trying to think of us. I did a website for one of the comparison market, like compare the meerkat. I did. Their tech team wanted a website, so I designed their website as well. So it's quite rewarding for that. So I didn't feel I needed to go home and sort of push the boundaries, I guess, and start my own creative.
Yeah, and there's like nothing wrong with that as well. So I wanted to ask the question because so many people feel that, oh, you work in an agency, that can't be rewarding enough to like sustain your happiness or to make you feel good about your work. You work for somebody else, and it's like, well, there are always going to be people who enjoy the work of working with team members, firstly,
definitely.
With a boss for someone else's brand or helping other companies, which is exactly what we do as a freelancer or as an independent system or agency in general. But to be able to work with a client directly, I'm sure you wouldn't like, maybe one day, but the clients you were working with at Mobas were probably so far away from maybe what you could imagine doing by yourself at that when you were working there. So it must be like an amazing opportunity to look back on and go, oh yeah, we did this for that and we did this for that. And
yeah, definitely. I think I think there's nothing wrong with working full time for an agency. You do get out of it what you want, and you can still be recognized when you win awards because your name is next to that. I think if you're always going to be in the full time industry, and you're happy with it, don't leave. Like, that, you know, it's safe, and you get good rewards. Like, yeah, you get paid like well sometimes. It just depends what you want to get out of it, really. And I was happy at that point, but it was just something just triggered in my mind towards the end of it, and I was just like, I think I need to be in London. I think, like, I was seeing what people were doing at the time. It was like Behance and Dribbble, and I was just like, I just felt like I had FOMO, I guess, like, probably around that time. I was just like, why am I not in London? I had a friend who I was working with at Mobas who'd left, and he just like, Alex, come to London. There's so much cool stuff here. So, and I had loads of friends who were like either illustrators or fine artists, and they were all doing that thing, and they work for some incredible people. And I was like, well, why haven't I done it? And if I'm going to do it, I've got to do it now rather than later. So I just decided to up and leave, and I just kind of just did it. And it was kind of, it was scary. I think it's probably one of the scariest things I've ever done. I think when you've never really spent any time in London other than going out and, you know, drinking or sightseeing, that type of stuff, it's quite a scary place. People don't really talk to you. It's crazy busy, and there's a lot of intimidation when it comes to design because everyone is so bloody talented. And that's like, but I just thought, if I'm going to go, I'm going to go now, and I'm going to be around people who are better than me, and that's going to make me better. So that's one of the reasons why I went, to be honest. Really.
So was the intention kind of to find a job when you moved into...
Yeah, so London? I took a full-time job, actually, for a company that lasted about 2 or 3 months. And
the company lasted two or three months.
I'm trying to think what they called, actually, but I can't remember.
Clearly not that important, whatever it was.
They weren't that important, yeah. they're called Four Communications, that's it. So they were like a marketing agency. They're really, really big. I got there, I had one interview, and the guy really liked my work, and he offered me a job pretty much the next day. So it was just an easy solution for me to get down and have money, as well as being able to find an apartment and rent. So it was an easy to get in the door there. But within a month, they'd given me zero work. I'd sat at a desk just working on my portfolio for an entire month while being there. I did nothing for them. And I was like, what is going on? And I kept having to go up to the design director. I was like, oh, so when am I supposed to be getting this work? And he was like, oh, it'll be coming. And it was probably like about 2 months of doing like barely anything. I had probably like a few little jobs. I designed a website for something that didn't go anywhere. And that was it. I was just like, right, I've just got to get out of here. And then I got my old boss I used to work for had given me a freelance job for a website, basically. So that got me enough money for me to leave that job and then set up myself as a self-employed designer. And then I ended up at an agency called Toaster, just contracting for them. And that's when I started doing work for Google, basically, working on like their presentation decks for all of the new products that they were releasing. So that was really interesting as well.
Yeah. Whoa. So slow down. So we've gone from
too fast.
we've gone from like doing web design, working at Goa, being crushed under the board, like moving to Cambridge, kind of realizing that Cambridge ain't all that, getting to London, realizing that no one wants to talk to you, and like, which is very true, by the way. Like, if you guys are listening from around this area who have been to London, you'll be surprised how much people don't want to talk to you. So you've kind of set yourself up as a self-employed person. How did you go about figuring out those first kind of jobs, those first connections? Because when my audience kind of, and I'm sure you get questions like this all the time, it's like, how do I find clients? How do I get clients? And as someone who's worked kind of across branding and web design, you've touched on development. Yep. How did you reach out and connect with these even agencies to do contract work or your first few clients? How did you make those connections?
So LinkedIn was quite a staple for me. Like, it was one of the most important things that I used at that point. I think after I'd worked in Four Communications and managed to land that job at Toaster, I put on my LinkedIn that I was like freelancing, available for work, web designer. I had a lot of good reviews. I think that's one thing that I got from every place that I worked at, I managed to get really good reviews from them, and got that on my LinkedIn. And I just basically just went through and gave myself an overhaul, built myself a portfolio that I got online, and that was on Squarespace at the time, that featured all of the work that I could possibly feature that wasn't, you know, disallowed by the agencies. I then decided to set up a Dribbble page. I started doing my own projects. So making up my own web design projects. I redesigned my website like a few times just to put on Dribbble. And then it was things like started doing logos. And then I got approached by Toastuff through LinkedIn, a guy called Rion. He was a really, really nice guy. He said, come in, we'll have a chat. It was like more of a coffee thing. And we just talked. He was like, so what do you want out of this? I was like, I don't know really, to be honest. He was like, well, do you want a full-time job, or do you want to like just work for us freelance? I was like, I'll go for the freelance route, see how it goes, and then we can talk after that.
Less commitment, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I'm quite lucky in that, because I've been in the industry for such a long time that I've got quite a good body portfolio of works that it, when I do show it to people, it can land me jobs. So for anyone out there who has that, that is obviously going to be easier, but I'd recommend just going it like alone with your own work, making up like design for your, you know, your portfolio. Do it like 3 or 4 times, or build some concepts of websites. Like if you're interested in skating and you want to land into that industry, just redesign like Route One's website, or like redesign a website that you look up to, and then post that on Dribbble, because that really did help me. I started getting people contact me for jobs like that. So that's kind of how that helped me.
So. Just to kind of jump on that comment of your portfolio and the experience you had, when you first started doing web design, obviously it was a very different world.
Yeah.
As you said, you briefly mentioned that UI UX wasn't even really defined as a term at that.
No, it wasn't. No.
So do you think that experience of basically you showing that you are invested in web design by saying, yeah, this is what we used to do, I started in this year doing this tech and these systems, and now we've like moved through and learned the new software, the new terms, the new HTML or whatever coding or service front end, back end, whatever it is, the fact you've shown the grit and the determination to move through and upgrade your skills, do you think that helps you as well?
Yeah, I think it definitely did. I think you have to adapt. Otherwise, yeah, you just look like a dinosaur. I've worked with a lot of people who were a lot older than me, and their work just wasn't up to scratch. It was like, even back when I was in agencies and we had to interview a few designers who were just a little bit older, they made no effort to try and be up to standard, I guess, and be on trends. I think you don't need to follow trends in branding, because obviously you want to make stuff look timeless. But when it comes to web design, your work can look dated very, very fast. And the industry moves so quickly, so, so quickly, that you just have to, you got to push yourself. Otherwise, yeah, you go to an interview and they'll be like, oh, this isn't really what we're looking for. You also taper your portfolio to look like the company that you're going for the interview for or approaching. Because if your work doesn't look like that, they're going to go, oh, this isn't what we're looking for. So you need to always change your portfolio to look like the company that you're approaching or talking to.
Sorry, go on. Yeah.
No, it's all right. So that's quite an important thing, just to make sure that you do that.
It's such an interesting aspect, because you're right. Branding is typically defined as something that needs to be timeless. And yeah, if you're creating something that requires the use of an app, for example, like you're making a mobile app, yeah, you typically as a brand designer won't be doing that yourself. You might be making some mocks, you might be providing some assets, you might be providing some art direction, but you're, yeah, not going to be building it. Same for the website stuff, for web design. You might be helping and assisting or providing assets or ideas or creative direction, but you're not the one building it. So you could, and you probably should, and I try and make sure at least I have some touch points within this industry to at least understand the basics. But you don't have to keep up the skill, like you don't have to have the technical skill improvement as in the same way that you would with something like, are you there, Alex? Oh, I think we've lost him. Okay, hang on, we're just going to pause. All right. Well, we're going to be back. The Wi-Fi, I'm going to have to edit this later. Man, you know the worst thing about podcasts? You know, having to edit them, that literally sucks. So I'm going to have to figure out where we cut off and sort that out later. But yeah, I was basically saying that when you're a brand designer, say you're handing off all these assets, all these ideas, all this creative direction to someone else to execute generally, particularly in a heavily technical field like UI, UX and app development, for example. So as a brand designer, you don't typically have to keep up with the technological advancement, as in like you don't have to practice it. You have to understand it, but you have to physically practice it, which I think is something that a lot of people don't realize about web designers, web developers, and people who work directly with the tech. Because I can design packaging all day, because packaging is not really going to change. Like, someone will invent a new printing method at some point, but for now, we're kind of set in our ways.
Definitely. I think like, the industry moves so fast as well. I think when I think back to when I first designed a website, I was always trying to evolve and trying to make stuff cleaner and more minimalist. And like that was always one of the things that I guess always landed me a job, because I was always trying to be one step ahead of what was already existing. And I think being on trend with like you said, branding and stuff, like it can look a bit silly, and you want stuff to look timeless. And I think it is changing. Like, web design is changing a lot. It is like more clean. It's more minimalist. Like now, like you want it to work better on mobile. And I think that's one thing that's changed web design massively, is obviously being mobile friendly has a huge importance on how you design a website. A lot of people just now design mobile first before they design desktop, because of the importance of it working. But still, I still see people design websites that just look overly cluttered. There's too much on it. And it's just like, you just need to sort of always dip your head in and out of what's happening around you. Like, being on awards, websites like that, and just looking at inspiration, seeing what people are doing, will always be keep you ahead of the curve. And the problem with like books is, in web design, books date so quickly. So I've never really used books in that industry. I just don't see the point. Because I remember when I first started reading books and looking at what was being designed then, like compared to now, it's just like, damn, that was like 7 years ago. And that already feels like 15 to 20 years ago. So it's just crazy how much it's evolved. And it's just definitely important to try and keep on trend, I think, for that.
It's something that you make a good point, is that the internet, this is the way I always explain it. The internet, 6 months on the internet is about 5 years.
Yeah, definitely.
That's typically how I look at it, because particularly in the technological side, where everyone can now access the ability, if you want to learn web design, you can go and literally learn it for free. You can go and learn HTML and CSS from free code academies all over the internet, like, because they want everyone to know it, because it's going to be such a pivotal skill.
Definitely. Now,
when that comes down to how that affects the process, as you say, like, imagine you had a HTML exercise book. In 6 months, it's going to be outdated. Something's going to change. Or someone's going to find a new way to lay something out in a more efficient manner. And when everyone has access, now that it's so democratized, like you can just turn the internet on and just learn it. Now that everyone has access, it means that the game moves so much faster as well, I bet.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's the same with anything online now. It's like, it's scary how talented people are and how quickly you can see like 16-year-olds who are just evolving so quickly in like game design or 3D or motion. It's like, wow, like how have you done that? But the thing is, like, the best time to start now is like 13. You have to grow up so damn quickly and like be almost create yourself a career like at that age, because if you don't, you'll get to 20 and the information that you absorb is like nowhere near as fast as you would if you were like 13 or 14. So it's like, it's just crazy how quickly this industry is evolving. It's like the tech market as well, as like mobile phones. It's like how quickly they all started looking the same, because every mobile phone company found something that worked. So it's just like everyone's doing it now. So it's really hard to be in a pool of talent and stand out. But at the same time, it's don't try to stand out. Try and find what works for you and make it great. And just focus on being on trend, I guess, when it comes to web design.
So you were working, speaking of finding something that works for you, you moved to London.
Yep.
And started working through an agency for Google.
Yep.
As contract work. So how did you get involved with pitch deck design and presentation design?
That was the first project that they gave me, basically. It was just like, we're going to give you this project. How do you feel about it? And I was like, I've never been really scared at taking anything off. I've never done before, to be honest. It's like, I've worked with branding guidelines before. And I think when you've worked with brand guidelines in the past, I think one of the worst brand guidelines I've ever worked on was Jaguar and Land Rover, because they are so tight. They're so finicky about what you need to lay out and where their logo is. They literally have to have their logo in the same place, and it has to be like spot on. They will probably measure their like print to make sure that their logo is in the right place. So it's like, I've been used to that. So I think the best way to describe jumping into a project is just do it, and like even if it scares the shit out of you, just make sure that you like try it, because even if you fail, at least you know you gave it your all, and then you're going to learn, and next time you'll be better. So I just always approach my projects like that. I just I think the first project they gave me was like it was pretty scary, actually. I think it was like for the new Android software that they were releasing, so it was being like nationalized on like the American TV and things like that for their new like pitch deck, basically, for that. So that was quite scary. But once I'd done it once, after that, you know, you learn it and you get used to it. So I just carried on doing it for them. And then they just started handing me other projects, so things like some web page designs, that type of stuff. And then once your name gets moved around London for working for one agency, and that's on your LinkedIn, then other people start approaching you. So you could just land one big job, and then other people will start contacting you for stuff that is similar. So yeah. And then obviously when you're a contractor, freelancer in London, you just contact recruiters and they will find you tons of work as well. So that also helps.
Yeah. That's something that I've not actually tapped into too much, is kind of, and it's an avenue that I don't think many people really explore that hard. I think about Lydia and the illustration industry. And that's very common. So you'll go through recruiters, you'll go through agents, and they'll source work or highlight you for other companies. But when it comes to branding and web design, it's not something I've ever really thought about. So you're saying you got through LinkedIn and that worked really well.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Was it a case of literally reaching out to these recruiters and being like, here's my portfolio, here's some skill set?
Yeah, so you do have to try, and you just basically Google's your best friend at this point. You just have to like go through, and like if you're in East London, so obviously London's split into West, East, North, and South. So depending on where you are, just Google like recruiters in East London for design agencies, that type of stuff. And there's tons, like there's probably hundreds now. There's a lot of like really small ones now. They're just setting up shop by themselves. So they're independent recruiters. And they will find you work like everywhere. And there are so many big design agencies in London. So I ended up working at We Are Source, We Are Social, they're called one. Smile, obviously Toaster, and there's a few others that I've done some work for. And a lot of those I've got through recruitment companies. And so the only disadvantage of that is when you go for a recruiter, they actually take a cut of your day rate that you have to specify. So you actually earn a little bit less than what you would if you directly contacted that agency. But a lot of agencies like you to go through recruits because it's tax purposes and things like that. There's a lot to sort of consider. But most of the work that I found, I just made sure that I was like searching for work every single day. I made sure that I wasn't wasting any of my time. If I didn't have any work, I wasn't going out and spending money. That was quite an important aspect, obviously, because London's quite an expensive place. You don't really want to be going out and spending money if you don't have any work. But obviously at the same time, doing that means you can network as well. So it's just a mixed array of stuff. It's to make sure that you're active, talking to as many people as you can, contacting friends. If you know people in the city, I had friends that were here as well. So that got me some work as well. So that does help.
Fab. And it's great to hear that you are, how long have you been living in London now?
It's going towards 4 years now, I think.
Yeah. And the fact you've been able to consistently keep yourself moving through that is really great, because a lot of people will get into London and they'll either end up having to go and leave because it's too expensive. It's like three routes. Like you end up having to leave, you end up stuck where you're not earning enough to really live, but you're only earning enough to kind of survive, and you end up just stuck.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people get that in big cities, where you end up going, well, I have to do this thing to earn enough money, and now I can't spend enough time to find more work, blah, 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 blah. But it sounds to me like you've found a system that actually is beneficial to you even 4 years on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm now, I think this is my first year being more like more of a proper self-employed designer. I'm now like, rather than contracting, and I'm actually finding my own clients, which has been quite a process. It's taken a long time. It's probably since like last summer that I've started hunting for my own work. And it's just, it's slow because I still have to take contract jobs just to make sure that I've got my bills paid. But I think eventually I want to sort of step away from relying on recruitment and to find me work or contact an agency, because it's great. It's amazing work. But at the same time, you still can't showcase a lot of it because you're having to sign disclosure agreements. And but then at the same time, along then, I decided probably about 2 years ago that I needed to improve my portfolio. So I've been doing tons of self-initiated projects, as you probably see on my Instagram. A lot of that is just stuff that I've just fully just gone into design. I've started loving it again. And I think that's when you become a freelancer, a self-employed designer, you get those little moments in time where you're like, God, I really love what I've seen. You're inspired. So you create something. And we're in such a great industry right now that we can post stuff and share our ideas and like talk to people in the industry. So I've been doing that alongside freelancing as well.
That's really cool. Because I say you've been really active on Instagram in the last, well, since we met, you've kind of done the same thing as me, which is dip in and out, but you're really going much harder on it now. So when it comes to the web design stuff, it doesn't seem like you share very much of that on Instagram.
No, I don't.
Is there any particular reason for that?
It's the application. I don't think the application suits web design much. I think there's obviously a trend at the moment on Dribbble. Dribbble works better for web design. I tend to post more website on Dribbble. But when it comes to Instagram, you only get to clip probably like the top part of a website. So it kind of, you showcase a header. And I think there's this trend out at the moment of who can design the best header of a website. And then they crop it and submit it on Instagram. And it doesn't really show much of the application. It doesn't really show the actual purpose of a web design. And if you were to like essentially build what a lot of people are showcasing, it probably wouldn't even work on the actual website.
Isn't that a thing that's been going on? I see people on Twitter all the time yelling about Dribbble and being like, once again, the front page is full of web designs and UI designs that will never work.
Yeah.
They're all just fanciful ideas to get clicks.
Yeah, like, that's essentially what is going on at the moment. I think there's obviously who can be on the front page, who's going to become the most popular. And I guess you've probably been talking to Tom Ross quite a lot recently, since he's been sort of talking about, he's obviously blown up on Instagram somewhat. And he's been talking a lot about vanity metrics and how that doesn't really get you work. And damn, that's so true. I really wish I'd known that when I first started on Instagram. I was seeing, obviously, like you were blowing up on Instagram at the point you're like you're on 20 plus thousand followers. And I was like, I remember seeing you and like, shit, I've really got to get my shit together. And I sort my Instagram out. And within like 6 months to a year of doing that, I realized that vanity, that's all it was for. You know, it's just a metric. It doesn't mean much. You're not going to get work. You might get the odd people contact you, but it's not going to be of any value. I mean, I get people contact me every day and they're like, can you do me a logo for $100? And I'm just like, no. I'm just like, there's no value in it. So it's kind of, it's a weird situation actually. And I think web designers are still using Instagram, and there are a couple of really, really good web designers out there who are using it and probably getting some incredible work, but they're using it not for the vanity. They're just merely posting it for interactions and just for their pure love of design.
And this is a common theme that I'm finding across the board with everyone I'm talking to at the moment, which is there's no point fighting this ever-changing algorithm, this ever-changing robot machine.
Yeah.
And there's also no point in making things that are inaccurate or not representative of what you actually do.
Exactly.
And it's honestly one of the reasons I've had, how many conversations have I had about this same topic? 1, 2, 3, 4, probably had 5 or 6 conversations along the same topic recently, where people, and I realized this, and Lisa Jacobs, my friend Lisa, she realized this at about the same time as I did.
Yeah.
Everyone's just sharing bullshit, basically.
It's so true.
And there are still many people out there who I check on occasionally, and they're still doing the same thing. But I basically stopped posting content because I was just sick and tired of not being transparent about it.
Yeah.
So I was mostly transparent, but it was always bigged up in kind of more of this vanity way.
Yeah.
And that ends up really being detrimental when it comes to building an audience long term, but also getting work. Because yeah. I've found through doing more and more client work, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this too, but as I've done more and more client work, I found that the more and more transparent I am, the better. So, because you want to partner with these businesses and these clients, you don't want to kind of hide your process away and turn up with the final finished thing. You want to actually spend the time to say, right, well, we did this step, we did this step, we did this step, this is why we made this, this is why we made that. And then they are much happier. And I think that needs to be done the same across social, rather than trying to make these fanciful bits of crap.
I completely agree. And I think I got stuck into a rut of probably exactly the same as what happened to you. It's just like, I was then just going home from like a really busy day with a client or an agency and spending like 4 or 5 hours creating something just to post the next day. And that was stressing me out massively. I was just like, I was overworking myself just for the sake of getting some likes on Instagram, just because I thought I was going to get more work. And that never really happened, and nothing ever went anywhere. But I completely agree. I think now there should be a trend of people posting a process and showing like what really happened with the client, like the sketches, you know, like the strategy, all of the idea behind like what happened on the project. That will like sort of give people more of an understanding about how a process works and how you approach your client and things like that. Obviously, there's also a trend at the moment, people posting like almost a blog in a slide fashion, isn't it? Like talking about steps that they went through. Obviously, that's a great thing. But I think that's also, everything seems to be becoming a trend rather than just being transparent about what you actually did in the project. I think you need to just be yourself and do what you want to do and post that on Instagram and not worry about what everyone else is doing. I think that's quite important.
Yeah, man. The second I saw that first 8 steps or 8, 10 tools to do this or do that, I was like, give it 2 days. I give it 2 days until it's all over my Explore feed. And lo and behold, it was filling my Explore feed. Just like completely filled with it.
Yeah, hundreds
and
of
it's,
it.
And it's fine. Like there are people like, I think it's Michael Yander. He was
He's killing it at the moment.
He's doing really well. He does it really effectively because he's been doing the industry for so long that he knows ins and outs and he knows how to present it really well. But everyone's doing it and it's just like, the only people that I think I've seen it who do it well, the guys from Pitch Proof and Michael Yander and Chris Doe's done a couple, but Chris's content's always been top quality anyway.
The thing is, he's the master of content. I mean, whatever he posts out, it's always going to be interesting. It's going to work for him. And I think do what works for you. Don't follow a trend, you know? Like, I mean, it's well and good, like, posting steps about, you know, of what to do, 1 to 8 and things like that. But, like, don't follow a trend because it won't feel natural. You're probably posting what you saw from someone else do rather than actually what you've done. And I think that you can see through that. You can massively see through it. And people who have probably only got, like, 2 years' experience in the industry who are posting stuff, like, in strategy, they probably haven't really done that before. So it's kind of like, I don't hate it, you know, like do what you want to do. That's cool. But at the same time, just do something that feels right for you and not whatever.
I'm going to be not so nice. I hate it. Like if, when I see like 100 of the same thing, then I'm just like, I'm done.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of like, you know, when you listen to Michael Jackson on the radio about a billion times, you're like, no, I can't stand this anymore.
Thriller only has the same kick so many times. But so when it comes to your process and maybe what people generally share online, what's the what's one of your favorite bits of your process that people don't typically talk about for like web design?
Oh, that's a tough question. Let me think. I think like web design's changed so much recently. Obviously with applications like Figma and Sketch, there's like parts of like where you're sort of building out a UI kit for a client, basically. No one really shows the UI kits or stuff that's done in the back end, or like all the, even the archive pages. Like if I look at my Figma application I've got at the moment for like a project that I'm working on, I've got about like 50 archived home pages, and no one ever shows like the original design. Everyone's just showing the finished design at the moment. And I'm guilty of that, obviously, but a lot of the time I can't show it because it's under disclosure agreement. But there are just tons of things that people aren't showing that might be rough iterations of a UI kit or a wireframe. That people aren't really sharing wireframes anymore either. So that's something that I think probably could be a good thing to show now, I reckon.
Yeah, speaking of technological advances and wireframes, I saw... Well, firstly, it's really cool that you share that, because you're right. In the same way that people only share the finished concept of a logo, for example, or they share like a beautifully drawn sketch, for example. I mean, I'll show you on camera. Like, I've got my sketchbook in front of me. Like some of the sketches I did for a project fairly recently, and they're just awful. Like, look at this page, mate. Look at that.
I know. That's exactly what
it's
mine.
A mess.
I'll show you mine. Look,
it's a mess.
Look, I'll show you mine. Look at all those.
Yeah.
Terrible. But I think like that's the best thing about the process. Processes are not pretty. They aren't, and they shouldn't. They should be just throwing out as many ideas as you can on a piece of paper, or on, you know, if it's web design or in your sketch, just chucking out tons of little blocks for design UI and like that type of stuff. The process isn't pretty, and we shouldn't be showing everything being perfect, because that's what gives people like anxiety to think that they always have to be perfect all the time. So we shouldn't be showing everything as beautiful and finished and a done concept, because I think it's really ruining the industry, and it's ruining of what makes people think that design is, you know, design isn't pretty, like it hasn't been. I've actually read a really good book by James Victoria about feck perfection, and that's basically about just doing something regardless of how pretty it is. And it's a really good book because it just tells you to get over the emotion of wanting something to be finished and done all the time. And I think that's quite heavily important at the moment, because people are going through stress, anxiety, depression, because all they see every day is polished lifestyles, finished products. And I think that's one thing that's actually probably killing this industry somewhat, because everyone thinks that they have to be perfect straight away. You're looking at someone who's done something for 20 years when actually you've only done 2 years, but you need to be as good as them. And that's killing off people wanting to even be in this industry, I think.
Yeah, you're right. It should be raw.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're exactly right. And it's the idea of saying you're going to take your shovel to the ground and you're going to dig out a perfect diamond.
Exactly.
No, you're going to dig out a rock that's full of iron and crap and maybe bits of sulfur and some poisonous things in there too. And you've got to chip away at it and clear all of that out and then polish it up.
Exactly.
And it's not going to be a case of finding the buried treasure on the first go. You have to dig 100 holes first.
Yeah, I'm far from perfect. Like I reckon it's probably 11 years now, maybe 11, 12 years. And I'm still perfecting my craft. Like I'm far from finished. I still feel like I've only just started. I'm 32. And there are people in this industry of like, you know, who have accomplished so much, and they're like in their 50s, but they still feel the same as me, you know. So I think it's very easy to look at what people are doing and think, damn, I can't do that. But stop, you just have to stop comparing yourself to other people. Show what's raw.
Yeah. Do you think more documentation would be good then? More kind of raw video, like Gary V-esque. Gary V obviously got quite a lot of production now, but kind of the rawer side that he suggests, where it's just a case of documenting every little thing that you can and sharing that in a consumable manner.
Definitely. I think he's so right. I think like you're more interested in seeing someone's process and like evolving than you are seeing when they're finished. Like I think Chris Dozton touched upon this about screen recording everything that you do and just backing it up. I think, because I went to obviously the Birmingham Design Festival and I saw his presentation. He's right. Like this is something that I now need to do. It's like buy yourself a hard drive, record every single thing you've done, store it, save it for later, go back to it when you're ready and edit it and post it, because people want to see like how you evolved and not the finished point. So
yeah, and that makes perfect sense. It's something that I've started doing more regularly as well. I've started a self-initiated project this morning for my Instagram and just practice and stuff, and started screen recording me looking for images on Pinterest and Unsplash. Like,
yeah, cool.
It's not the most exciting thing in the world, but it makes sense to do it because you can share that later. And this is something I posted about on Twitter, actually. I put on my new website recently.
So that's nice.
Thank you. I mean, it's not quite as heavily animated as yours is, as beautiful as yours is, but I smashed it together, okay. But yeah, the case studies that I put up on there, I got some flack from people for being like, oh, I just want to see the finished stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I don't care. I don't care that you want to just see the finished stuff. Like, you're not my target audience.
That saddens me a little bit because, I mean, Behance is obviously a good thing for this, and I see it all the time, like, people like chucking up their sketches and processes in a scrolling manner. I mean, that's what Behance is great for. And I think that's exactly what your website should be for. Like, yeah, you're going to get a client come to you and see exactly what you've done. And they're like, this is exactly what we want. Like, we've seen your process. This is what we want to go through. It doesn't matter like what other people think, obviously, because like, I don't understand the judging behind anything really. I mean, you can judge like people's work, but you never really understand what they've gone through to get to that solution. It's like, obviously, when you see all of these big brands release a new logo, like, and then they're like, people are slating it. It's like, you do not know like how they got to that point, what the clients asked for, the iterations they've had to go through to get to that point. So it's just like, don't judge someone because of their final product. And it's like, I think it's great that you've shown
that. Well, unless it's the Pepsi universe. We can agree we can agree the Pepsi universe is bullshit, but yeah.
Or the BT, or the new BT logo.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I think it's difficult to go and judge someone. I think it's silly because, you know, everyone does stuff differently. We're all unique. You know, we're all here trying to get, you know, a piece of the pie all together. Let's just be nice to each other, you know?
Yeah.
I think, you know, a client's going to see what you've done and it's going to be perfect for them. There's going to be another website that a client sees and, you know, the way they've done it, it's going to be perfect for them. No one's going to be exactly the same. So let's stop trying to be.
Yeah, for sure. So in that kind of feeling of sharing and giving, if someone was interested and approached you to say, hey, I'd love to get started in web design, I don't know where to start, where would be the first place you'd point them?
Cool. That's tough. Let me have a think of how I started. I think creating your own project is probably the best way to start, to be honest. Look at what other people are doing. Like, go see some inspiration. I think everyone's really lucky now that there's tons of websites with billions of inspiration of good design, like good design, really, really good design. I was lucky to have found something in a book that was decent back then. So I've had to evolve, but now you can find everything on a website. So go to awards, see what you like. If you like a particular brand, for example, if you're into skating and you like, you know, like you want to build an e-commerce website, go to Read One, see what they're doing and try and redesign it and then build a project out of that, post it, make a portfolio, post it, and then get in contact with those people in that industry and say that you work hard. You really want to like work hard for them. You're willing to do whatever it takes to get something. You're probably not going to be able to charge for the work because you're new in the industry. And then they'll probably give you something for free. Contact your friends, your family. There's going to be someone who's a builder or a landscaper or something. They need a website. Create something for them. That's how I started. I had to do work for friends and family and build on that. You know, it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be great to start, but there's always going to be someone who wants a website for free or for 500 quid. You're going to be able to do that. So you just make sure that you're hungry and just keep pushing. You will get there.
Yeah. And the tool you'd recommend at the moment that you're using is Figma, yeah?
Figma is incredible. Figma's free. So even if you've got no money, you can download Figma and start web design now. Like there's no excuse not to. I mean, obviously you need the tool, you need the laptop to be able to do it. But you can have a cheap PC. Figma works on PC and Mac. So Sketch, obviously you have to pay for, and Sketch only works on Mac at the moment. So Figma's universal. It's an online based application. So you can either download it or you can use it in your browser. And then look at what people are doing. Go on YouTube. YouTube's incredible now. You can get hold of anything. And obviously, you're a big fan of Skillshare. There's loads of videos on Skillshare that you can do as well. Look up to people. If contact people like me on Instagram. You know, I don't mind talking to people and giving advice. There's no reason why I can't talk to you. So I think there's just a lot you can do. And Google's your best friend. It's like a Bible. So yeah.
Google is your Bible. On that note, Alex, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your journey with web design and where you've got up to being today. So where can people find you on the internet?
So you can find me on Instagram at Apirius Design. You can find me at Twitter, which I think is at Apirius Design as well. This is the benefit of having my surname. It's unique. And Dribbble, Apirius Design, I think pretty much everywhere.
Oh, cool. And we'll put all those links down in the description. Also, quick plug while we're here. Alex just mentioned Skillshare. So you can do plenty of different courses on there. I'm sure there'll be a Figma one. If you want 2 free months, I haven't put this at the top of the show or anything like that. If you've made it this far, if you want 2 free months of Skillshare to go and learn any particular software, I mean, web design would be a great place to start after this show. You go to skl.sh/cfowlerdesign. That'll get you 2 free months. I don't hand that out very often, so go get it while you can. But yeah, thank you so much, Alex, for joining us today. Yeah, we'll definitely be back on at some point. I'm sure we'll grab a beer in town at some point over the summer.
But definitely.
Yeah, thank you to everyone who's listened to the show today. If you can leave a review on iTunes, we'd really, really appreciate it. And we'll see you guys same time next week. Bye for now.